Welcome to Eastlake again. Question for you to start it off. Do you feel like you said thank you enough this last week? If you just reflect for a moment. I know sometimes I mean to say thank you, but I forget. I bumped into a potluck this week, and I wasn't invited, but they were nice enough to let me come in. I didn't bring any food at all, and I got to have a big plate of food at this potluck. And then I left, and I realized later that I didn't even say thank you to anybody. I had to go back the next day. It bothered me, and just tell them thank you for letting me be at the potluck. And sometimes that happens to me. I don't mean to. Life goes by, and I just forget to say thank you to somebody. And of course, this time of year, you sort of get focused on it. It's like, do I have anybody I need to say thank you to? And this idea of being able to have a grateful heart, mine will come and go oftentimes based on what I'm focused on. So we've been talking a little bit about, 90% of life is usually pretty good. You like it. There's, things going on there that you're pleased with. 90% is just fine. But there's always that 10% that's a struggle or difficult or I don't like it. And when I'm focused on the 10%, I don't find anything to be thankful for. I'm not grateful at all. And it's kind of silly sometimes. It's like this. Let's say, for instance, that you over at my house for Thanksgiving dinner. And so we're all at the table at my house, and they start to bring out all the different things for Thanksgiving dinner. And, here comes the stuffing, which I love. And you're like, whoa, here comes the stuffing. I don't know why we only get it once a year when everybody likes it. And now here comes the gravy, and wow, the gravy's here. The mashed potatoes. And, as they start to put the thing around on the table, everything looks great. I mean, here comes the hot rolls. And then the turkey arrives, and you're just looking at the whole thing. And then someone has to ruin everything with bringing out a plate of yams, which I hate. Now, I understand I'm in the minority because most people think yams are just awesome. They're great, but I hate yams. But if you were at that dinner and I stood up and all of a sudden said, oh, that's it. Thanksgiving's off. The whole thing's ruined because there's yams on the table. Everybody stand up. We're not doing it. Somebody had to ruin the whole thing because now we have to have yams. You think, well, how silly. That's just one item. But sometimes my life looks like that. My wife's not perfect, and if I get focused on her imperfections, I'm not thankful for who I'm married to. My children aren't perfect. I get focused on their imperfections. My job's not perfect. My boss is awfully not perfect. My body's not perfect. My money, finances, nothing's perfect. And when I get focused on the 10%, I don't feel like there's anything to be grateful for. And so today we're going to talk about a shift, that it's possible to maintain a grateful heart. So if you have your note sheet, just write at the very top the big idea, life is way better if, and write that in, we maintain a thankful heart. Now Jesus ran around with a group of people that were his close friends. You may have heard of them. They were called the disciples. And one of them was super, super close to him. His name was John. He was there from the very, very beginning. And he wrote down different things about Jesus' life, and then he put it in a biography. And I want to read some of that today to sort of give some context to this idea of how do we maintain a thankful heart. So you can look along as I read it to you. 6 days before the Passover ceremonies began, Jesus arrived in Bethany where Lazarus was, a man he had brought back to life. A banquet was prepared in Jesus' honor. Martha served and Lazarus sat at the table with him. Then Mary took a jar of costly perfume made from the essence of nard and anointed Jesus' feet with it and wiped them with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance. But Judas Iscariot, one of the disciples, the one who would betray him, said, "That perfume was worth a fortune." I just do it, my voice sometimes to freak you out. So. It's my spaceship voice. So if you're wondering about it. It should have been sold and the money given to the poor. Not that he cared about the poor, for he was in charge of the disciples' funds and often dipped into them for his own use. Jesus replied, "Let her alone. She did it in preparation for my burial. You can always help the poor, but I won't be with you very long." So John puts this whole thing together, and he tells us this story. And there's five different characters in the story, and today we're going to look at each one. So the very first one is Martha. And now Martha, a banquet was prepared in Jesus' honor. Martha served. which you could almost let that slip by if you didn't know her story. But here's the thing with Martha. This isn't the first dinner that Jesus has attended at her house. And Martha was a perfectionist. Like all perfectionists, she was rarely thankful. Because I know this, you might know this, that when you get caught in the perfectionist loop, when your performance has to be seen as perfect, you're never satisfied. You're really never happy. You're never really thankful for anything. In fact, when I get caught in that loop, I'm usually grumpy and irritable and difficult to be around. Which was exactly what she had been like when Jesus was at her house for dinner once before. This is in your notes, but let me read it to you. This is Martha the last time. I'll just read it to you. Martha went and said, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her to help me." But the Lord answered her, "Martha, Martha, you're getting worried and upset about too many things. Only one thing is important. Mary has made the right choice and it will never be taken from her." That was last time. Grumpy Martha. Now, let me give you the backdrop of why everything's different at this dinner party that Jesus is at, and why I might even look at it as a Thanksgiving dinner. A week prior, Martha and Mary had sent for Jesus because their brother Lazarus had gotten so sick that they were scared that he might not recover. And in fact, he didn't recover. He's so sick that he dies before Jesus gets there. And so it's one of those times where you think, oh, God's late, or he didn't understand my prayers, or what's happened. And when Jesus finally arrives at their home, Lazarus is already dead and buried. The funeral's over, and they have him in a tomb. Now, this is the cray-cray part, and maybe you could believe this, maybe not, but in this part of the story, Jesus decides he doesn't want him dead. Now, here's one thing about Jesus is, you know, it's not that difficult to believe he was a kind man, a smart man, a wise man, a great religious leader. But the stretch is, was he actually God? Because he does something for Lazarus that men don't do. He prays for him and Lazarus comes back alive. It's sort of like the principle of everything is going to turn out just like you think unless God says so. Pigs fly unless God says so. And in this particular story, Jesus makes a distinction, and there's several of them. Anytime you run, anybody says, well, he's just a man, we'll say, well, then how did he do that? Because men don't do that. He brings Lazarus back to life. And this dinner happens a week later. It's like a Thanksgiving dinner. They're all gathered, and they give this dinner in Jesus' honor because they're like, wow. And Martha's way different, because this time, she has a thankful heart. Maybe the words finally got in that Jesus said to her when he was talking to her the first time, when he said, "Martha, most of the things you're trying to control, you'll never be able to control. Martha, you're small, and God's big. And he's got your back." See, gratitude begins with, I can't control everything. It's way beyond my ability to orchestrate it and make it turn out like I want to. But God's big, and he can. And he's got my back. So here's how she shows up at this dinner, completely different. Satisfied, not stressed. When you're caught in the perfectionism loop, everything has to look perfect, I want people to see me as perfect, you'll be stressed all the time and rarely grateful. But if you can take a moment, especially this week, and just say, I can't control everything. God's big and I'm small, and he's got my back. What are you facing right now that you know it's beyond your control? It's so difficult to let go. And maybe let me give you an idea. I know it's popular in our culture to say you have to let go of things and whatnot, but I have found that in my own life very difficult to do. Because, like, when you let go of it, where does it go? Maybe a different idea than letting go would be to give to God. I'm not trying to let go of anything, but I am trying to give something to God. The weight of the world is on my shoulders, Lord, and I'm going to give it to you. Because then it becomes thanksgiving. Somehow Martha had caught that finally. Martha, I've got your back. What do you need to give to God this week? Maybe you've tried to let it go before and it just seems like coming back like a boomerang. Because when you give it, there's somebody there to receive it. Now, the second person in the story is Lazarus. Lazarus sat at the table with him. And when I first read this story, you know, I read that he was just sitting there, and I thought to myself, well, what's he doing that shows a thankful heart? I mean, you know, Lazarus is just sitting there. I mean, here's the guy that got the miracle. He should be the most grateful person, and he's just sitting there with Jesus. But then as I thought about it more, I was like, how typical of me. Because if someone isn't doing something, I see it as not counting. I'll play my cards up front a little bit. It's much easier for me to work than rest. Much easier for me to do than to be. So when I read through the story, it was so typical for me to say, well, Lazarus is just sitting around. But then I thought, when is the last time I just sat with Jesus? If you're a Christ follower here, same question. When's the last time you just sat with Jesus or anybody here today? You know, you just sat with him. I did it this week. It was awesome. I just sat with him. And that's all Lazarus is doing. And I understand the problem because there's a lot to do and there's a lot to get done. And this last week, as I was reflecting on Thanksgiving, every year I try to think of some things I'm grateful for and say thank you to someone. And I thought of someone in my life. And so I went to see them and I went into their office. And it was a little awkward for me, but I went into their office and told them, you know, thank you for this and that. And then I left. And as I had this hollow feeling, I stopped. I thought, why don't I feel? And then I realized, you know, it was almost like I had just checked a box on my to-do list. I was like hardly there. So I had to go back and say thank you again. It was awkward, but I went back and said, listen, can I try that again? I know I said it last time, but can I have another chance at this? And I had to stop and try to power down enough to be there and say thank you. Because here's one thing I've discovered is that no matter what I do, what goes so much deeper is being with people. What goes so much deeper than the words and the action is just being with people. Being precedes doing. It's tough. There's been plenty of times at our house through the years we've had people over for dinner or we go out to dinner with someone and we get done with it. You know, after they finally go out the door, my wife stands and looks at me. She goes, what is it with you? Why have you got to turn every dinner party into a work party? It's like one long appointment with you all night. Can't you just be with people? And usually I'm like, what are you talking about? I mean, it's like, and you may even right now today, you might be sitting there thinking, what are you talking about being? And I understand it's a struggle. It's tough, but here's what it is. To power down, drop the agendas, and just sit with someone. Even a few minutes to sit with Jesus this week. Just sit with him. It's amazing. Lazarus should have been doing cartwheels. He should have had a banner in the air. I mean, he should have been doing everything. And he just sits with the Lord. Because being precedes doing. Now, the next person is Mary. Took a jar of costly perfume made from the essence of nard and anointed Jesus' feet with it and wiped them with her hair. We probably all have something that belongs to us that's super, super special and we don't like to share it. It's like mine. And that might be the undertone of this perfume. This is like her special perfume. I'm sure she never thought she was going to put it on someone's feet. This is like her special perfume. At our house, we have the good towels. I don't know if you have those. I didn't know this when we got married. It caught me totally by surprise. It's like, you know, in our bathroom in the back, that bathroom can look like whatever you want. But the bathroom out in the front of the house, that has the good towels in it. And another word for good towels is not to ever be used towels. I mean, they're decorative. They're on the thing there. And you know, I didn't know that. And so I'm glad to say that I wasn't the only one that didn't know it, because one of the ways I learned it is one of our relatives came to town and was staying with us, and they're going to, you know, use the bathroom, and Clarice brings in the other towels you're supposed to use, and I won't tell you what his name is, but I'll tell you his initials, Clarice's dad. And he comes in, and he just takes a shower, and he used the good towel off the rack, you know, and he just used it, and when he got done, he just threw it on the ground, and Clarice came out with the towel. She said, "What is this?" And me and him are just thinking, "Well, it's a towel." He's like, "No, these are my good towels." I was like, "Well, why don't you just paint the wall that color, man? Why would you?" What, you know, it's like, you know, it's like guys don't understand good towels. I know that for a fact. You know, that's kind of what this perfume is. This is the good stuff. Not anybody gets to use it. Do you know when I have a thankful heart, I can see what matters most? That's why I love Thanksgiving week. You get to take a moment and just say, "Whew, what is it that matters most?" Gratitude lets me see what matters most. She maybe was sitting at the dinner and all of a sudden she thought, "Oh, I know what I'm going to do." And there's this little piece in here about her letting her hair down. I like that because, you know, today, no big deal. We wouldn't think about it. But in her culture, Middle Eastern culture, to let her hair down was huge. Here's what it means. I'm going to do what matters most no matter what anybody thinks about me. That's what a grateful heart allows me to do. I can see what matters most. I don't care what anybody thinks about it. Because I'm filled with gratitude. Now here's the next two. It's a conversation, Judas and Jesus. And John captures this conversation between them at the table. Judas is upset. He's like, "What a waste of money. We should have used it for the poor." But John must have known that he had a secret motivation. Because he says it straight up. He said he didn't care anything about the poor people. He was stealing money.
Now remember, Judas is an insider. He's way on the inside.
Judas is handpicked by Jesus right from the very beginning. He sees everything. He has a front seat to the entire ministry. And here we are now towards the end of it, and Judas is at this table, and he's complaining about, you know, that money could have been, and the whole thing is a secret motivation, because at some point in his life, the payoff became money. And you can make money the payoff for anything. Any relationship, any job, anything you do. You can boil it down to, how much money am I going to get? I mean, he's sitting at a Thanksgiving dinner with all these people. It must have been amazing to see Mary do all this. It's just like crazy. And he's thinking about the money. It's ironic in the story that when he finally succumbs and betrays Jesus and all his friends, it's ironic that the enemies of Christ offered to pay him 30 pieces of silver. And so after he betrays Jesus, he gets the 30 pieces of silver. And when he's so guilt-ridden that he can't shake himself from the guilt, he goes back to these enemies of Jesus and he tries to give the money back to them, and they won't take it. And in the story that is recorded in the Bible, someone saw it, an eyewitness, it says that he eventually just threw the money away. Money does not lead to a grateful heart. And it's interesting in this story that Jesus doesn't call him on it. He doesn't call him on stealing. He calls him on the deeper issue of ingratitude. Judas, you're missing it. It's like Jesus says, opportunities pass. Judas. You're in this amazing dinner tonight. You got to see this unbelievable miracle. It's about to get by you. Is there any opportunities coming up on you this week, or maybe something slipped by this last week to be grateful or to do something? It doesn't have to pass. That's really what Jesus is saying. He's saying opportunities pass, but because of me, they don't have to. There's this psychological term. It's called the Bader-Meinhof phenomena. And let me read the definition to you. You'll probably sound familiar. It says, describes a curious psychological fact that after learning some bit of new information, we start noticing everywhere. So it's like when you're going to buy a car and you get your heart set on that car and you're going to buy that car and you start dreaming about the car. You already know the color of the car. Everywhere you go, you see the car. And it's not that there's more occurrences of the car. It's you're more aware of the car because you're thinking about the car and you have a heart for the car. And I think that's how gratitude works. When I have a thankful heart, I can see it everywhere in my life. The person I'm married to looks way different. My children look different. A difficult boss looks different. I can see things that were there the entire time because I see life differently through the lens of a grateful heart. And that's the message that he's trying to get across. Now here's the bottom line, and write it in your notes. My gratitude has a positive impact on everyone. Boy, that's good news. And the house was filled with the fragrance. Is that awesome? Even if Mary would have wanted it just to be her special thing that only her and Jesus got to do, it wouldn't have been that way, because that's not how gratitude works. It spills over everywhere I go. Can you imagine if where you work or in your family, that when people met you, it made them stop and think about what they were thankful for? Can you imagine if the fragrance of your life, when people were with you, they just stopped for a moment and thought, what is it that I need to give thanks about? What are the things in my life that make me say thank you? Just because they were with you, the fragrance of your life. It's Thanksgiving this week. The only bad part is yams. But there's so many good parts. It's a year we get to stop and take a moment and just reflect and say, what is it that's going on? God, what have you done? What have people done for me? What, you know, I'm thankful for what, God? And then that frankness spills over into others.